Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. DA got that dope.
You already know my protocol.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Fantasy CBD Super Show, brought to you as always by RotoCurve. I am your host, Walter Waddell, a.k.a. DubDeuces85. Another edition, another episode. We are back. March Madness, we are fully in the swing of things. Conference tournaments are going on. There is the OVC Finals coming tomorrow. Missouri Valley Conference has knocked out their top two seeds. Lots of madness, lots of craziness going on. We're basically a week away from Selection Sunday. Pretty wild stuff. Got a nice little slate here on DraftKings. Of course, nice slate on FanDuel. There's three in all on DraftKings. We're going to do what we do every week when we come on the show. Go game by game, talk about our favorite plays, who we're fading, locks, value, all that good stuff. We'll also talk about some bets we like. Give you guys all the info and pretty much use this show as a first look when you're going through all the research and building that you're doing. We have some tiebreakers or, questions, things like that. Use our show for that. Big tournament tomorrow, $12 price point, a little bit better than the $15 price point on DraftKings. It's 2K to first tomorrow if you're interested in playing that. That is the big one. I'm going to be joined by Eric, a.k.a. Razzle, and I believe we'll have some other call-ins later on, potentially from that dude, Johnny. You guys need your comedy relief and some betting information. He will be the guy for that. Let's get Eric on the line, though. My dear friend, how are you, man?
Good, good. How are you doing?
Sweet. You've been, how you been? You taking a couple of days off from DFS, right? Or maybe not today, but the other day or something?
Yeah, I've kind of, I don't know if I've taken completely off, but I've fired maybe one lineup or so. Tonight I made a couple and pulled out a little bit of a profit, but yeah, I've just kind of, felt like I was getting into a rut, research-wise, mentally, so I figured probably a good time to take a couple days off before this, stretch that we're going to have over the next month straight, basically.
Yeah, no, that's a good, and that's a smart thing, and that's, we like to talk a little bit about processes and things on the show when we can. If you feel like you're making mistakes or, your process is off or you're just, you're not feeling good about your build, sometimes it is good. It's difficult for me because I have an addictive personality anyways and I never want to take days off. But, yeah, sometimes it's good to step back and play lighter or, just take a slate off or even, try to watch a sporting event without betting on it or playing DFS. It's really weird. Almost been ruined to a point where I can't even watch a game unless I'm, the hometown team or I'm invested in some way if I have a prop bet or, some kind of bet. So it's kind of nice to step back because, yeah, like you said, we're going to have day basketball. We're going to have night basketball. We're going to be going every day. And then we'll be eventually doing shows every day. And it's just going to be happening all sorts of fast. The season's basically over. It's just about, it's crazy how fast it came and gone this time. So. Let's get into the slate. We'll have some baseball is coming up. I know that's Eric's thing. I personally will be grinding some WNBA, so I've had some people ask me about potential content for that. I got to get Razzle into the WNBA game. There's a lot of touts like Drew Dinkmeyer and stuff who enter the big WNBA tournament, and they don't even give content for it because they actually make a shit ton of money, believe it or not. So, yeah, I digress. Let's go ahead and get into this late here. Wisconsin versus Indiana, the first game on the docket. Ken Pom has it 65-63 in favor of Indiana. Wisconsin 340th in tempo. We know they're very slow. On the road here against Indiana, it was 210th. Wisconsin has been a surprise. If the season ended yesterday where they had a tiebreaker for the one seed in the Big Ten, that was certainly not expected by me. I definitely have to admit that, Coach Gard has done a great job. Dimitri Trice has really stepped up. Micah Potter is only scratched the surface of what he's going to be. Reavers has, I think, unfairly had, the whole team put on his shoulders, you know, and with Hap gone, and I think he struggled a little bit with that, but now he's kind of settled in and starting to play well. Aleem Ford's made that next step. Pristol's been good off the bench and starting. So it's a really a nice Wisconsin team, one that you can't necessarily ignore for DFS, especially even though it's on the road, which has typically been rough for Big Ten teams this year. Not so much recently, but overall, I don't fear Indiana all that much. So I don't mind, you know, Trice, Potter, and Ford for GPPs. Reavers at 6'2 seems like a decent cash play there. So any of those guys are fine. Davison, I don't necessarily have a very good read on him from time to time, so I don't use him except that short flight where he hit like 30 or 35. I think I had him for that one. On the Indiana side of things, Trace Jackson Davis is having some foot pain. He's listed as questionable right now, but I'm fairly certain he's going to play and not miss this game. But if he were to miss, you know, obviously the usage would be great for Justin Smith. Joey Brunk would be back in play probably. And then Race Thompson, who has flashed quite a bit of upside, who's still down there at 4-1 on DraftKings. His minutes, he only got 13 minutes last game because Bronk didn't get in his usual foul trouble. Race back down at the 4-1 marker is pretty interesting because he had that run of 17-25, and then he dropped back down to 8-8. In a game before that against Minnesota, he had 27. If he can get, you know, right around that 20-22 mark tomorrow, he's a pretty good play. Wisconsin's, you know, a good defense, and we typically don't like to target against them. But on a slate like this, where maybe the value isn't quite as obvious just yet until we have some injury designations for Georgetown and some of the other guys, I think Race Thompson is fine. And I always like Rob Finnessy at home. He's getting to the price now where he's almost out of play and getting into that 5K. He's been right around the 4.5 to 4.6 marker for a while. And he's been 3 out of the last 4 over 20 fantasy points. But Finnessy is a guy that I do like to use, like I said, at home for a value where he's typically not owned more than 5 to 10%. It doesn't really hurt you that much. He's got a nice, decent floor. You're a Wisconsin guy. What are you doing with this game?
I guess the right thing probably is to just really fade the game. There's just so many other games that are – have much higher totals and, you know, a lot more pace, but I like Potter GPP wise, but, like, you know, he could just finish the game with 13 minutes for whatever reason. I don't really like Trice's price point on DK. I get there's some cash safety to it at 7K, but I feel like you're really asking for a ceiling type game just for him to get to the 5.5x. I'm with you on fantasy. I love the upside. You know, just a few weeks ago he went for what, like 42 DK points or something. I'd have to look back, but you know he's got such big upside. And then for me, it's Devontae Green on a senior day narrative, which I'm gonna mention about a few players today or tonight, but. I could see Devontae Green kind of sliding back into the starting rotation. They've, you know, they generally fluctuate their guards' starting roles. So I think Devontae Green could kind of surprise tomorrow. Of course, I'll be rooting for Wisconsin because I would like to see them lock up the one seed, you know, after Kobe King decided to transfer and all that stuff went down. But I don't know. I hadn't really given as much thought to Race Thompson because it looked like his minutes were kind of coming down. And I kind of wonder if Deron Davis might play a few extra minutes in a senior day thing. But I think for the most part, though, I'm probably going to just end up fading this game, aside from maybe like getting shares of Finnessy or Green for GPP upside.
Yeah, Deron, I was just looking at Deron Davis too, not necessarily as a play or anything, but where he may draw the start and, you know, get some additional minutes. You see last game against Minnesota, Joey Brunk played 28 minutes, which is pretty much the reason Race Thompson's minutes were down. So it is tough to use him. He's a really boomer bust type play because if you are using him in tournaments, you're basically saying that you think Joey Brunk is going to get in foul trouble because if he doesn't, and he plays well like he did last game. He does have that capability. It's Joey Brunk, but he is possible to put up 20 fantasy points or more. If you know, if he's on the floor for that 20 minutes plus, then Racy is just not going to get the time. And then also scary is Jerron Davis. I like the call out on Devontae Green. You know, he pays possibly even being a little sneaky because people will ignore this game. It's a 30% shot rate when he's on the floor, 27% usage rate. You know, he's a chucker. I mean, we've seen him have games where he was just, he had the green light and shooting lights out and had 40, 50 fantasy points midseason, I believe. So he's definitely in play for tournaments. And if you're in the Mania queue, I could see him being a potential, you know, queue winner where everyone's saying, damn, I should have rostered him and, you know, got him at 7% or some crazy number. Let's move on to Villanova versus Georgetown. This is going to be a game where I think a lot of people are going to target. KenPom has it 75-72 in favor of Villanova. They're 277th in tempo ranking. Georgetown is 85th. Georgetown has really been – Patrick Ewing's been saved from himself. You know, I know they've been losing a lot of games recently, but the season overall, is, you know, despite the injuries, kind of seems like it's been okay. I didn't expect much from them with, you know, the transfers and the stuff that happened and people leaving. But without him having a large plethora of players to run a crazy rotation with, he's been having to play the same core group of guys. And, yeah, they've dropped some close games and some tough ones, but they had a nice win over Butler, you know, a nice win over Creighton. They're not a team that's going to roll over by any means. And I think that they're just doing better with a smaller rotation. So we definitely have to pin down, you know, if Yurt 7 is out. Let's see here, what's the newest update? It's just questionable, I believe, unless you see something else. And then Mac McClung. It's probably a pretty good bet that Mac McClung is going to be out based off what I read. I don't know if Omer would, you know, try to play because, you know, things are done for him after this year. So, I mean, it depends on you know, if he can even go at all. If he doesn't, Quetus Wahab, trying to say that name right, he's really kind of an enigma to me because he had 34 fantasy points last game against Creighton, and I really kind of – it's a good matchup against Creighton, and I was way under on him because I was just worried about his fouls and on the road, and I was kicking myself for not just going for it because he really is good against teams that aren't as good in the interior. And Villanova does have interior guys, but their defense hasn't been what it was in the past. So if Omer's out – I do like Wahab here. Again, at just 4-5, I think he could be popular. You know, either way, a lot of people, they don't seem to pay attention to Twitter, some of the less regular players, and you see they kind of luck out because, oh, this guy's going to play, or he ends up being a late scratch, or he plays only a few minutes, and people that ignore the news and play the replacement anyways, or like a Javon Blair with Mac McClung coming back and he still drops 35, stuff like that they benefited from. So you just have to kind of take that with a grain of salt. People are benefiting without paying attention to the news. Timothy Igbofe, I think is how you say that name. He only had the 13 minutes last game and had 9 fantasy points. But again, if Omer were out, you know, he's 3K. He showed his upside with the 20-minute game against Xavier. He had 16.75 fantasy points. So I think he is also a fine tournament punt that I don't expect to be that owned. Javon Blair, you have to, you know, continue to consider him. His price has risen all the way to 6-7 now. They finally have priced him up. He dipped down a few games inexplicably. He had that 10 against DePaul, and then DK dropped him down to 5-6, and he was huge chalk again. 32, 30, and 47 his last three. Again, I'm not scared of the Villanova defense, so I think that Blair is perfectly fine in all formats if McClung is out. You know, the price is cutting into your upside a little bit to where maybe he's more of a cash play and not necessarily like the key winning play or the big tournament winning play. But he's a really nice, safe option if you have that salary to fit in, you know, a mid-balance type of lineup. Jamarco Pickett, Jagan Mosley, Terrell Allen, they're all fine. You know, I don't seem to be too interested in those guys on a slate-to-slate basis, so I'm not really looking in that direction. Gillespie's back. He's looking healthy now, I guess, you know, after that one game where he was a little banged up. You know, he hasn't really had that blow-up game recently, and Georgetown would be a nice little spot for him to do so. So I definitely like him at 7-2, where I don't think he'll be that owned. I think for tournaments, he's just fine. Jermaine Samuels is there at 6-5. He's habitually, you know, under that 7K marker, so I don't mind him. Justin Moore is up there at 6K now, which is a no-go for me. I know he just hung 31 after a lot of us had him against Providence and he had the 14. Three of the last four is over 30 fantasy points, but I cannot envision myself paying that 6K tag.
maybe Eric will have a different opinion, but I'm not going to go there, I don't think. And then you got JRE, Sadiq Bey. You know, these are all guys who are good, but they're always priced about right. You always want JRE to be – he's never under that 7K marker, but if he was, he would just be, like, one of the best plays on the planet, but he just never is there. So it's a play I don't mind, but I certainly like him a lot more on FanDuel where I can get him for 6K, or Sadiq Bey where I can get him for 6-3, or even Jermaine Sandos for 5-7. So I'm certainly going to be higher on the Villanova guys here on FanDuel. What do you got going on with this game?
I mean, I'm trying to figure out how to love Villanova here, but they're, I mean, in general, they're all priced up, right? Like, three guys over 7K makes it tough. You know, I love Samuels always when he's, you know, low to mid 6Ks. Moore being up to 6K does worry me, but if he's going to continue to shoot 7-plus threes a game, like, you know, that price on DK is easier to swallow than, say, if he's, like, 5,500 on FanDuel. I haven't even looked at FanDuel yet, but he's still 5K on FanDuel. But, you know, just the three-point shooting helps out a lot. And, yeah, I mean, I kind of wonder if Gillespie is fully healthy yet. So until I kind of see him being fully healthy and explosive, like, I have to think that Moore's going to handle the ball a little bit more. Seeing that, you know, those 31-plus point games recently, three out of the last four, two of those games came on the road, so that's a plus sign for me to see. You know, and one of those came where he shot just 2-for-8 from three, so, like, he doesn't have to make 5 threes in order to get the 31 fantasy points. But I know, like, there's a lot of times where he's burned us where we thought he was in great spots or, you know, and he put up like a 16 or 17. But I want to get use multiple Nova pieces. I just don't know what to do. And then I'm kind of hoping that your 7 plays. Without there being an official timetable ever stated, like, I worry that he's really not going to be able to play. But if he is said to be good to go, like, that 6,600 price tag on DK is extremely attractive. But I just, even if he does play, like, unless they come out and say he's completely healthy, like, he might just be out there to start on senior night and play, like, 10 minutes and that's it.
That would be my main worry, you know, because it is a nice price, but it just feels like trap written all over it because, you know, it's going to be really important to see tweets, you know, updates about if he's warming up, if he's getting a token senior night start, if he's on a cap, all this information is going to be even more important than normal because we have, you know, those two value guys in the post and Ingolfi and Wehab if your 7 doesn't go. Are you paying up 6-7 for Blair? Because it seems like every week, every slate, I don't want to pay that for Blair. He can come down, he can be chalk, I can survive it. And he's just churning out 30-plus fantasy points. He's still after the Paul game. He's just really safe right now. What are you doing with him?
I am probably going to still be on him. I just like, you know, I've watched a little bit more Georgetown basketball the last couple weeks than I had for the first part of the Big East season. And even in the blowouts late, like, he's still on the floor when, like, Allen and Mosley or Pickett come off, like, and they send somebody else. Like, he seems to be the one that's being left on the floor. And then also doing a lot more ball handling. Kind of been him and – when I watch, him and Mosley have been handling the ball more than Allen has. So – if he's going to have the ball in his hand so much to, I mean, last game go with 7 assists and 7 boards, like, I'm going to find it really tough to not plug him in a lot of things. He's taken almost 9 threes a game over the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, the usage is just going to be too much to ignore for me.
All right, we'll move on to the next game here. Marquette and St. John's, another attractive looking one for DFS. KenPom has it 77-76 in favor of Marquette. They are 60th in tempo ranking, and St. John's, we know, is very fast. They're 22nd in tempo ranking. Marcus Howard is 9-2. He's you know, on raw projections and minutes expected in fantasy points per minute, Howard is going to, you know, look phenomenal because 50, 50, 43, and 43 the last four. And I know his last two road games he's been over 40, but he's still kind of typically struggles a bit on the road. I do have letdown concerns about him. I'm certainly not going to full fade him, but I typically play the Howard fade in queues in big tournaments just because he's always so heavily owned, and he does have one of those, you know, 35 games or a rare foul trouble or injury or whatever comes up. It's just huge leverage. For me, the leverage almost always outweighs going with him and, you know, taking one of his 35, especially at this upper tier price. But it is St. John's, and a lot of people tear them up, so you definitely want to have shares with him. Brendan Bailey at 5'5 looks appealing. You know, Anum at 6'6, McEwen at 6K. All these guys have capabilities. Even Jamal Cain at 4'7 would be a little interesting. It's just they're very high variance in terms of they could give you a 30-plus. Or they could give you a legit five from Bailey. It's really kind of, you know, not it appears on paper the slam dunk spot, but these guys are certainly far from slam dunk. Now the St. John's prices on DraftKings are kind of like stupid appealing. You know, LJ Figueroa at 6'8" at the start of the year, you know, and he was higher priced. He's been over what 7'6", almost 8K earlier this year. I think he's 8'2" at one point. 6'8", automatically, I'm like kind of focusing on him, and he hasn't been that great. You know, the Creighton game, he had 44, but at Butler, he had 11. At Nova, he had 10. At Seton Hall, he had 25. They've been playing a lot of their games on the road, and he's just been getting locked up as St. John's top player. You know, he's against Tyshawn, against Gillespie, and Aaron Thompson, some of these better defenders. He's having some trouble. You know, he's a tall guy, but he seems to attract the other team's best defender, obviously. But 6'8 for tournaments, I'm thinking that Figueroa deserves some ownership because he probably is going to continue to go low owns, and he could very well pop a 40 out on Marquette. Now Julian Champagne at 6'7 is a little higher price now. I like this spot for him too. He's been playing like a guy that should be more like 7'5". But it'd be tough because I think at 6'7", most people are going to take Javon Blair and not Champagne. So I think that could be your very, very, you know, leverage spot because this guy's playing 30 minutes or more, taking 10 to 15 shots a game. He's averaging over 6.5 rebounds a game, contributes a little bit in blocks and steals, but, you know, he takes threes. He doesn't really get assists or anything like that, but he's a very solid player, and he should certainly be priced higher than that. Rasheem Dunn is down there at 6'1". He's a play I like. Marcellus Arlington at 5'2". He really owes us a game, Eric. He owes a lot of the DFS community. You know, that game against Creighton where he started and he was saddled with fouls and was ineffective and only had 8 fantasy points. He started going off on Butler earlier, and I kind of chuckled because I thought, well, here we go. He's the game after, as usual. But then he didn't do anything in the second half, so I felt better about it. Never want to cheer for a guy to not do well, but when you fade him the week after and he starts doing well, it's kind of irritating. I do like him here at home and as well in this spot at 5'2". I really like the way Greg Williams plays. His price is 5'2 now, but for good reason. You know, he's been playing pretty well. Three of his last four, he's hit 19.5 or more fantasy points. Plays really well at home. He's kind of a bit of a pickpocket. He does a little bit of everything. He wasn't that good of a three shooter, but he shot 70% against Creighton. Don't expect him to shoot that percentage from three tomorrow. But I definitely like Greg Williams at 5'2". I suspect, one second here, see what these guys are on FanDuel. So I'm going to guess they're probably super cheap. Arlington is 4'9". Williams is only 4'5 on FanDuel. So, you know, you can be stocking up on some St. John's guys. Figueroa at 6'4", Champagne 6'1", Dunn 5'9". So all super attractive there to me. And then everyone, you know, like Rutherford and Sears and some of these other guys who pop once in a while, I don't really, you know, take much stock into them.
So I do like St. John's guys here at home. I think that they can potentially beat Marquette. I just don't believe in Marquette that often on the road. But yeah, this is a juicy game. I think that a lot of people will probably target the Marquette side because St. John's just target against them. They give up a lot of fantasy points, but they might be fired up for, you know, the home game here coming in the season. How are you, kind of prioritizing guys from this game? It seems like one of the best stacks of the slate.
I mean, I'm a bit higher on Marcus Howard in this spot, even though it is on the road. Like, I just the matchup is too inviting, and he's playing extremely well from a fantasy standpoint. I don't know. Like, I haven't gotten into construction yet, but, you know, he's scored, what, 30-plus game points in 4 straight games. So, like, he's just doing so much that I'm going to have to use him in a handful of things. But I prefer Champagne over Figueroa for 100 cheaper. Champagne's kind of been a lot more consistent lately, showing similar upside as well. So, like, if you're coming down to debate those two, I actually think Champagne's probably higher owned of the two, just based on recent box scores and the fact that he's 100 cheaper. You know, that $100 can come into play just because, you know, I can't tell you the number of times where I get to an ideal build and then I'm 100 short of the last guy to jam in that would really make me feel confident about my lineup. Anim is kind of picked it back up after going through a lull, so I kind of like him here. My favorite play in this game is actually going to be Rasheem Dunn. I just like his scoring upside. So, you know, kind of like the Marquette-Seton Hall game where I wanted to pair Miles Powell with Marcus Howard and hope they just go back and forth. Like, Rasheem Dunn kind of reminds me of that guy in this spot. Obviously not as good as Miles Powell, but you know, can go 7x if he's making some shots and doing some assisting as well. So he's going to end up being my favorite. You know, I'm with you on the Earlington situation. I like Williams too. You didn't mention Chase Johnson, who I kind of like for Marquette, the way he's been rebounding, and he's a little more dangerous on the offensive end than Theo John is, even though he doesn't get a ton of looks. But he does have double-digit rebounds in 3 straight games for Marquette. And then I would think that Rutherford starts tomorrow as a senior day thing. He was, you know, up until, what is it, about 8 games ago or so, he had been starting. So I could see him kind of sliding back into the starting lineup tomorrow as a senior, which then could get him a few additional minutes. And I know he hasn't done really much in a while, but was it against Xavier, he went for almost 40 DK points. So, like, the upside is there, but the floor is pretty low and it's kind of dangerous.
Yeah, he's just not very good. His offense, his O rating is 86.9. You know, he's just really inefficient. He did have that, you know, that upside game. I think that was the game he was getting just a shit ton of steals, and he was shooting way above his average from deep. Corey, you know, that runs our Dynasty League, he was just, you know, kind of beside himself because he was a Big East fan. He was just cracking up about that game. So he certainly could. You know, guys, it's kind of been a hit or miss thing this year. You know, some guys are just, they're so keyed up for senior night that they just kind of fall flat, and then other guys, they just seize the moment and take it and run with it. So it wouldn't surprise me because this matchup doesn't scare me for him. But, yeah, it's just hard-pressed because I almost feel like it's you're burning in, you know, to try and chase that one because, you know, he's got that 40, but then 7, 13, 14, 10, 9, 9, 7, you know, that's kind of who he is. But yeah, I mean, if he gets pitchers fire again, starts hitting all those threes and you know, dropping dimes and all that, it very well could happen, especially to get somewhere, you know, between 25 and 30 minutes. at this point, they got to get Williams on the floor more. That guy, I really like him in his future. But yeah, it's a good game stack. And like I said, I will certainly have some Howard shares too. I don't want to be caught without him. I just like, I'm going to be in that mania queue tomorrow, and I highly doubt that I would probably use him there just because I expect him to be so highly owned. That if he does, you know, go under 45, somewhere under 5X or 4X, I want to be able to have that leverage. Ken, let's go to the next game here, Auburn, Tennessee. Ken Palm has it 68-66 in favor of Tennessee. Auburn's been pretty horrific on the road anyways. They're 127th in Temple ranking. Tennessee's 314. Tennessee's been showing a little moxie here lately. You know, they won three out of their last five, and there have been some pretty gritty games. That win against Florida was just nails, physicality. And that Kentucky win, they went to Kentucky and interrupted, and they won a game. I was not expecting that. They're kind of coming together here a little bit, and I think this is a spot that I want to fade Auburn, because I'm starting to respect the Tennessee defense more. They're at home. They're going to grind this game out. Auburn has just kind of, you know, they're opposite of last year, and they were heating up at the right time, right? Heading into the tournament, they were just boom, and they hit their stride and got the Final Four. Now I kind of feel like they're running on fumes a little bit, and Pearl is not solidified or confident in his rotation, because we've seen Flanagan, we've seen Williams, we've seen Cambridge, we've seen some of these younger guys who we're going to be talking about next year as, you know, probably regular plays, right? And they're just they've shown upside, and he's just kind of screwing with his rotation a little bit. And yeah, he's had some injuries. Pierre Floyd's back now, and McLemore, and these guys are foul prone on the road. It's really just a tough spot for me to get really excited about Auburn, especially when I see Doughty 7-3, Wiley, who I love. I'm a big Austin Wiley fan. You know, 7-1 is a really tough price. I yearn for the days of him when he was 5-5 and could get, you know, 30 fantasy points in 20 minutes, because his fantasy points per minute number is just fucking ungodly high. McCormick 6-7, that's okay. Isaac Okoro at 6-3, probably the if I was, you know, I had to use an Auburn guy, and you know, typically I get asked this because Auburn is an attractive DFS team. Usually it would be Okoro. Seeing what he did last game, you know, granted it was against Texas A&M, which they lost that game, but he looked good. 15-5-2. He's been getting into foul trouble and picking up a lot of fouls just because of his aggressive nature. But in watching that game, I watched some highlights because I wanted to see why they lost. He looked really, really quite good and calm and collected. So it wasn't really on him on the loss for that one. So he is the one Auburn guy that I would play. On the flip side for Tennessee, I do think that Auburn's defense is better than it gets credit for on a slate-to-slate basis. Bowden at 6.9 is the tourney upside guy, but I know maybe Eric, I'm going to guess here, but Santiago Vescovi at 5.8 is I don't know if he's going to be popular, but it seems like a good spot to go back with him. I think some regular players will probably use him here in the spot too. And you know, people that look at game logs are going to see 12, 24, and 17 and say, yeah, pass. But if you see, he's still playing 30-plus minutes. Turnover number is, you know, kind of maybe getting a little better. He's in the 3-5 range instead of the 8-10 range. You know, but he still contributes. He still shoots a bunch, 5-10 shots a game. And you know, I feel like this will be an okay spot. Now, Yves Fons, I don't like using him. He irritates me. Fulkerson, you know, the bigs are fine. Now, the only thing with Vescovi is that Josiah Jordan James is now clearly looking healthy after being banged up, and he has rattled off back-to-back 35-plus fantasy point games on DraftKings. He had 37 against Florida, 12-8-6, and on the road erupt, he had 16-7-5 for 38 fantasy points. He's only 5'6". He's going to be the popular balls guard for sure with the general public, and I think for good reason. You know, I think you can still ride him and feel good about it, and he is the one ball that I would. However, I do feel like that's totally could have a sneaky good game here. So those two guys I'm certainly looking at because they're sub-6K. But I think it's the Tennessee guys that we want. What do you think about this one?
You know, I'm pretty similar to you. I actually like Josiah more than Vescovi. But also I've been using Josiah even through some of the crap performances, like against Arkansas and even Auburn, the first matchup. So, like, you know, I've been using them through, so I'm not really chasing points here, just because I've been on them the whole time. So I'm just going to continue to ride him because I believe in, you know, his talent. And as long as he gets 7-8 shots, like, I think he does enough elsewhere on the court to pick up other stats. You know, then I probably, like, I'll be using Bowden for GPPs just because he's got the upside. Another senior on senior day as well. And then for Auburn, it, like, I want to be able to use Wiley. I don't know that I can trust him. Like, I feel like at this point he's just a solid cash option. To where if he were to get 30 minutes, then his GPP upside would come into play. I always use Doty just because, you know, he seems to have some upside when whenever he's on the floor, but it's really a Coral because I think he's now fully healthy. And you kind of see that kind of increased over the last few games. He's kind of done a little more. So I think he's probably my favorite play for Auburn. Getting him in that 6-3 mark is pretty nice. Should be really safe for all contests, and obviously the upside is there. So, you know, I can see a little mini game stack here, you know, Josiah with Okoro and probably Bowden for GPPs. Like, that trio for me is intriguing enough. I do kind of wish Auburn was still dealing with an injury somewhere to, like, Purifoy or McLemore or something, just because I would like to see Jalen Williams see some more minutes. You know, at 3-5, he's probably almost still in play, but he, you know, he's, instead of seeing 15 to 18 minutes, he's probably only going to see 11 to 13 minutes or so. But he's been in double figures, you know, what, 4 out of the last 5 games, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, you need a little bit more minutes from them, but, you know, that he certainly has the upside, and that they have a nice little group of guys coming in next year, those three, so I don't mind him. We'll move on to the Kentucky-Florida game. KenPom has it 70-66 in favor of Florida. Kentucky 203rd tempo ranking. Excuse me, Florida 316th. Florida is just I don't know what to expect from them. They were on a 3-game winning streak, and they lost this Kentucky team. They turned around and kind of beat down on LSU, and they lost to a tough LSU game, and then they took care of business against Georgia. I don't really know which team's going to show up tomorrow for them. They're a tough one to bet. My Florida futures are feeling quite poor right now. You look at Florida on DraftKings, you know, Key Johnson at 7-7. He has a lot of upside. I mean, throughout the game, he had Tennessee, where he had 19 to 42, 56, and 32. But he's just, you know, he's priced so high that he's got to hit that high number, 30, you know, 35 plus fantasy points in tournaments to really get you there. Now, when he did face Kentucky last time, he had right around 33, which is fine. I have trouble paying that price. Kerry Blackshear at 6'8", if you would have told me to start the year, he'd be priced at that. I would be super excited, but he's just not, as we said last show, he's just not a guy that I'm targeting anymore. We keep waiting for the, you know, the breakout. He's had a couple 30s here or there, but he just hasn't really had that game where he broke the slate like he thought he would. And I know that there's still Kerry Blackshear truthers out there that are going to say, hey, 6'8", I'm back on the train. You know, this is Florida senior day. He's done after this year. He's gonna break out. And I get it. I do. The ship has kind of failed for me. I really always like Andrew Nembhard, but he's just not. He's not giving me what I need right now. His price is 6'6", which I think he would be fine to use as a cash option. But around him is that, you know, Blair, Don Figuera, you know, Champagne type of players, which I think Andrew Nembhard is overlooked. And I would take any of those guys over him probably when given a choice. Noah Locks there at 4-9. Scotty Lewis has been, he's only 4-8. He's way better at home. I don't know what his minutes, you know, if they're going to get diminished tomorrow for any of the senior day stuff. But if he's seeing around 35 minutes at home, he is really quite strong. Even the game there against Georgia on the road, he took 10 shots. had 19.75 fantasy points, and his price point dropped to 4.8. So I'm really quite interested in using some Scotty Lewis here late. He wasn't a guy I really had been using midseason much because of his role, but now it seems like he's starting to figure things out a little bit, and he's just, like I said, way better at home. So I am interested in him there. For Kentucky, you know, I always love Quickly. Probably won't have a ton of him tomorrow. Usually every slate I'm like, you know, the leader of the Emmanuel Quickly ownership. I have a ton of him in my NME stuff. But I'm just going to be backing off him a little bit. I still want some. You know, at home against Kentucky, he put up 36 fantasy points. I think he's definitely a guy who should clear 4X pretty easily on a game-to-game basis at the 7-2 price point. I just, for tournaments, I think he lacks a little bit of the higher upside to get you there, but I do like him. Maxey at 7K is just okay for me. Richards at 6'9". Hagans at 6'6", who was, you know, then struggling with injury. And then Montgomery got a few people last slate. He kind of was, you know, all his minutes are up around 30, 29. You know, he's a good matchup here. So he's going to do well. And, you know, got in foul trouble predictably. Still played 28 minutes, but he didn't do much. And I know 4-3 is an intriguing price point for someone potentially playing 30 minutes, but I can't do it with him. So for me, it's Scotty Lewis here with some Quickly. And then I suspect over on FanDuel, if I really want to get Key Johnson, a 7-1 there, you know, still a little better than a 7-7, but I can get my Johnson ownership over there most likely, and some tournament shares on DK. And then Nembhard at 5-6, he just always pops out to me there. Who do you like for the Kentucky-Florida battle that we're about to see here?
I think I'm actually back on the Blackshear wagon for this game. I don't know. There's obviously just something about it. You know, seeing that price, like, you know, he hasn't flashed the gigantic upside, but, you know, dropping to 6'8", he doesn't need to go for 40, I guess. So I think he's kind of a sneaky GPP option here. You know, now that he's 900 cheaper than Key Johnson is on DK. But really, like, for me, I'm just, you know, him for GPPs, Key Johnson, I think, fits any contest you want to put him in, even though, you know, being priced up to 7-7. And I'm still on Quickly. I've been using guards against Florida. Even though they've been slower, they just don't have the kind of the defensive upside to slow anybody down in the backcourt. And I just like the way that Quickly's playing right now. So I'm still going to use a ton of him.
Sounds good. All right, Baylor versus West Virginia. This is not going to be a game that I'm looking to use a ton of in my process when I'm going through and kind of moving players around for my mass multi-entry. I have an exclude option, as everyone else, and West Virginia is in the exclusion territory because every time it tries to tell me that they're projected well, they just bone me or Huggins doesn't play them. So I'm really just not confident in West Virginia guys, and I'm just, it's too big of a slate. It's juicier options for me to really deal with them. Now, if you do want to use it, Ken Palm has it 65-64 in favor of Baylor. Baylor is 287th in tempo ranking, and West Virginia is 120th. Now, Devontae Bandu just had a really nice game. You know, Tristan Clark missed last game. Mark Vidal missed last game. So, you know, Bandu got the senior day start and he looked really good. I think some people will see, you know, a 4.8, he did good. He's going to get high minutes. I don't mind Bandu. I don't mind, you know, using him, but I think there is better spots than to use him here because Bandu has shown time and time again, even with, you know, 25 plus minutes when he's gotten that spot, when there's been injuries to Teague or various other guys, you know, he's just a low fantasy point per minute type of performer. And I think he's one of those guys that got pretty keyed up for his senior day, and he just was shooting lights out. So I would approach him with caution. Gillespie, you know, I think he'll be battling it out with, you know, Culver and Chibwe. So I don't think I'll be touching those guys. Jared Butler's playing amazing right now. Teague and Davion Mitchell are both, you know, fairly cheap, and I think you could use them too if you want to have some exposure to a game where people maybe won't. I mean, as I said, I'm not messing with, you know, the Haleys, you know, senior day for him. Tad Sherman was a guy that I was excited about for a little while, and then he got himself in the doghouse because the problem is Huggins just doesn't let guys play through injuries. I mean, not injuries, turnovers and mistakes. And some of these young guys, they need to be able to just play carefree basketball. If they make a mistake, then fine, coach them, do what you need to do. By all means, I'm not a D1 coach. But it just seems to me like if you're constantly having a guy looking over his shoulder, if he, you know, gets a double dribble or he throws the ball away or he misses a three, thinking he's going to get the hook, it's just going to make him play tight, and it's just a bad situation. And if I haven't gotten it through to you guys, I'm not using West Virginia tomorrow. Eric, what are you doing with this game?
Pretty similar to you. Not really looking at West Virginia. I mean, Culver or Shibwe could just go off for a monster game because they randomly do it. And I believe it was Shibwe that had a really strong game against Baylor the first time. I have to look here just to see. He went for over 34 DK points in that game. But, if I'm using West Virginia, it's one of those two, and it's really just GPP-wise. Or I'm using, you know, one lineup with one and another lineup with the other just because I can't figure them out. Baylor, I can't ignore Butler with the way that he's been playing. Been really good for the last couple weeks. And the matchup against West Virginia's backcourt, it doesn't scare me all that much. And Baylor is obviously getting the pace bump here. I can be talked into Maceo Teague or Davion Mitchell for GPP upside. I don't think I'll use Bandu at all, even if Vito and Clark are both out. But I would consider Matthew Mayer because Baylor is going to need the size. I think he went for like 24 DK points in the first matchup, playing 17 minutes. So he's just going to play more minutes. I know he's at his highest price point of the season, but, he's been getting more and more minutes and kind of plays with energy. So, that can be a good and a bad thing, I suppose, here, but, his energy off the bench, he still isn't coming out there turning the ball over. He's only had one turnover in every game over the last 10. So, he's somebody for GPPs that you can save some money with that I think should probably approach 20 minutes in this spot.
Yeah, I've been using a lot of Matthew Mayer actually the last couple of weeks, and he's always, sub 10% because people don't really have been noticing him, and he's kind of gaining favor and getting himself into the rotation and somebody they rely on, especially with, injuries to Clark and now Vital. He's definitely a guy to look at, so I like that call. Next game here, Ken Palm has it. Purdue versus Rutgers. It is 65-60 in favor of Purdue. Rutgers, 232nd in tempo ranking, taking on Purdue's 334. This is the Purdue senior night, right? So they got Evan Boudreau, who's been just an assassin. And Jihad Proctor are the two celebrating that. I will say our guy T. Will absolutely destroyed Rutgers back on the 28th of January at their place, which is a tough spot to play at the back. He had 17 and 13 with four blocks. I'm sorry, no, he's 17 and 13 with two assists. So 36 fantasy points, right around the same price point. T. Will is always a guy to use in tournaments because he can, go off in short amount of minutes. But this would be concerning because I think, obviously, Bruno's been playing well, so he already is going to automatically, get minutes. But now that this is his final game there at Purdue, he's probably going to see 30-plus minutes. He just saw 34 against Iowa and had 38 fantasy points, 14, 14, and 3. As long as he doesn't pick up fouls, I mean, I never in a million years thought I'd ever consider paying 5-6 for this man. But here we are. He's certainly worth it. And I think if you're running multiple lineups, I think you need to have your exposure on him. Proctor, I don't really necessarily like him all that much, even though it is, for that transfer senior night, but he will, and he's the other two I really like. And Eric Hunter, if you want to use a Purdue guard.
For Rutgers, Purdue is very Jekyll and Hyde in terms of when they're on the road, they're terrible, and when they're at home, they kind of curb people, and they're capable of being a completely different team. So there's really no one on the Rutgers side that I'm that interested in, except maybe a little Geo Baker, who at 5'7", has the potential to absolutely dump that price. The last couple of games, he hasn't, but in a tough road game at Wisconsin, he had 16-5-6 for 32.5 DK points. Something like that at 5'7" is not too shabby. He's clearly healthy, playing 30-plus minutes, taking 10 to 11 shots, and contributes in multiple categories. So Baker would be my most preferred Rutgers guy if I was going to go that route. What are you doing with old man Evan Boudreaux here? You going to have a lot of shares, and who else?
Going to have shares, which, I'm with you. I would have never thought I'd want to be using him, but, he's just grabbing a ton of rebounds, playing more minutes than Harms has been. I can't explain it really, but, he's getting it done. Even in the first match against Rutgers, he still put up 22.5 DK points in 19 minutes. So, the increased minutes, the shots, I have a hard time just not getting a share or two of him, and it might come back to hurt me, but the only thing I could see is I probably would rather use Eric Hunter Jr. For $100 more. I really don't know. I should probably be looking to fade this game, right? Purdue's just so tough at home, but they're not overall a dangerous offensive team. So this game should stay a little bit lower scoring, but I never have any reservations about playing Travion anytime that he's on a slate. So I'm definitely going to use him. And then just like you, I think the only Rutgers guy I've have interest in is Geo Baker, but I do have some intrigue in Jacob Young. His minutes have picked up the last couple of games. It might be just because he's kind of hot from the field as well, but he's combined for over 62 DK points in the last two games, averaging 9.5 shots. So there's a little intrigue there.
All right, we're going to move on to Georgia LSU. This is another kind of crown jewel game of the slate. Ken Palm has an 85-76 favor of LSU, Georgia 70th in tempo ranking. They play very fast, minimal defense, always fun, and LSU is 89th in tempo ranking. So this is going to be a fast-paced fantasy scoring game that you certainly want some of. This will be the final home game for Skylar Mays. I know Eric's a big fan of Skylar Mays, and also Marlon Taylor. So those are the two guys. I don't know if they'll give a token, start to Marshall Graves or not tomorrow. I wouldn't be that concerned about it. Mays and Taylor are certainly in play. Anytime Georgia's on the slate, they always go right to that game, check prices on both sides. I'm immediately intrigued by Anthony Edwards' price of 8-1. He is a guy that I threw him off, and then I mid-season I lessened on that. I wasn't so tough, and I started using him and enjoying the benefits, and he's really settled down and not trying to do so much and let the game come to him more. You can see some games where he's just dropping dimes or he's not forcing shots, whereas earlier in the season he was just forcing up bad shots. He's still taking a ton. He's really starting to let the game come to him. So I could easily see him hit like 45 tomorrow at 8-2 and just kind of do it almost quietly in a way. Hammonds is fine at 7K, but it's Edwards for me. I've been using a lot of Jordan Harris lately. He was chalk last slate. He didn't do that well. He only had 14 fantasy points. Before that, he had 24. I really had hoped that he was going to play more minutes. That was a senior day type of situation at home against Florida, and he just played the 27.
I think that's really what he's going to be playing, is that 25 to 28 minute range. Price is up to 4.7, so it's not as much of a what I thought going into last week, a slam dunk. But just know he has that 30 fantasy point upside, so I do like him. Sevier Wheeler is a guy who's going to be a very regular core play, I think, for me next season. Price is at 5.3, so a guy who can go out and get 20 fantasy points quite easily in this matchup, if not more. You don't love 5.3, but I'm certainly going to be, if he happens to fall into my lineup as one of the last guys in or something like that, I'm happy to do so. He's not going to be a guy I build around, but I won't be evading him either. For LSU, yeah, Skylar Mays, 8K senior day against Georgia. Sign me up. I'll be all over that. I think he's going to be dominating the touches, and he's going to have the green light to take shot after shot after shot. So I'm all about Skylar Mays for tomorrow. Trenton Watford is always a good play. I think he is going to be fine. I think Williams and Hammonds kind of neutralize each other. Smart is fine at 6'4". He's kind of, he hasn't really shown that upside that much this season like I thought he would coming back. I really thought he'd be, kind of a regular 35 fantasy point guy. He just really hasn't done it. Darius Days I will not be using. He's one of the guys I can't figure out. I really liked his game midseason, but he's fouling, man. He's just fouls at the most inopportune times. And when he gets on one of his foul runs, he doesn't stop. And he's a guy when he gets too early, you can book it with anyone that'll take the action that he's going to get his third early, and then when he comes back, he's going to get his fourth every single time. So I have worries and concerns about him. Marlon Taylor at 4.3, he is a guy who is just not a good fantasy point per minute performer. That injury, I think, just took some of his pep away, his bounce. He's a guy I expect to play 30 minutes tomorrow, assuming he doesn't get into foul trouble or anything crazy like he did against Arkansas. And I do think he will also have the green light to take some shots additionally. Probably will go maybe a little overlooked just because, you look at his log, there's nothing sexy or appealing about it. But 4.3 for a guy expected to start and play 30-plus minutes, I think you want some exposure, especially in this matchup against Georgia. This is a get-right spot for Marlon Taylor. So Taylor, Mason, Watford, I don't mind Smart. And then, like I said, Ant Edwards, I think, is in a really prime spot tomorrow where I think he'll get glossed over a little bit and he could win somebody at a tournament. 8-1 just seems a little cheap for him. What do you think, man?
Basically exactly the same way that you're thinking. Probably not going to use Wheeler. I just don't know if he has the GPP upside at 5.3 right now. But I do like him. I think I am going to go to the Marlon Taylor a decent amount and just kind of hope he has one of those bust out games, since he has started the last two games. And I'll probably definitely be on the Jordan Harris train. I generally don't use Javonte Smart for GPP wise, especially on DK, but he's one of those guys, especially in this matchup, that you should just plug into your cash lineups or small field, GPP, like the higher buy-in that might be 15 to 25 players or whatever. Javonte Smart just seems like he's always locked in for 25 DK points or so. I always love using Skylar Mays. I prefer him on the road, unfortunately, but against Georgia's backcourt on senior night or day, I just think his upside is extremely nice, and his floor should be decently high here.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't even increase in price after back-to-back 40, so it's just, I don't know how he doesn't hit 5X here in his sleep with maybe potential for a 6X plus gem in this matchup. All right, next game is Kansas versus Texas Tech. This isn't a game that I'm interested in this game from a fan perspective, but DFS, I don't know. Ken Palm has a 68-64 in favor of Kansas. They're 229th in tempo ranking. Azubuki is obviously healthy and a really nice game. Texas Tech, 231st. Last home game for them, we'll be looking at here. TJ Holyfield, Chris Clark, the transfers, this is it for them. I feel like Moretti should be a senior, but he's not. So those two guys will be sending out in style. Chris Clark had a really nice game last game. Only 4 or 5. He did make some key mistakes down the stretch, and the Texas Tech fans really roasted his ass on Twitter. But, I mean, he's been kind of banged up, not playing regular minutes, and then he's thrust into the, you know, crunch time. And, you know, he hadn't really been playing overall. He had a nice game of 6-8-5 and a steal. So at 4-5, if you tell me I can squeak out another, you know, similar stat line for around 25 fantasy points, I'll be all over that. Now, Kansas has, you know, obviously – one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in the country, but, you know, it's still senior day for Texas Tech. They're at home. Not an easy matchup by any stretch of imagination for Kansas. It's not like they're going to waltz in there and just destroy them. It's still, you know, Coach Beard, and he's going to have his guys ready, bottom line. So I think I will have some Clark shared. I'm talking myself into him here on the air just for tournaments because I feel like I have a strong feeling that he's going to have a nice game. He's going to either that or he's going to be so keyed and he's going to be playing so wild and physical that he's going to get in foul trouble with, you know, banging down low. If he, you know, Holyfield should be guarding Ozzie, but you notice Clark, he likes to get down there and try to, you know, box out and chase down rebounds and stuff. So I see him either getting in foul trouble or really having a nice game. Holyfield there is 5-4 as well. I would almost be so brazen to use him in cash. I'm not going to, but I don't have any issues doing it just because I think at 5-4 he can go out and get you the, you know, 23-24 needed. My man, Kevin Mechler, at 5-5, it's unfortunate because I don't think I can continue using him. I've been using – there hasn't been a slate gone by since, I don't know, early February that I haven't been using him. So it's going to be weird. I may have to get a for the brand share, but at 5-5, you know, next year, if he's this price, we'll be laughing because he's going to be way better than this next year. But, yeah, it's tough for me to pay this price for him just because I think he may end up losing some minutes to some of the older guys. And then looking at James Ramsey at 6-6, that just feels too low, you know, coming off the game where he had 22 fantasy points only against Baylor. You know, he had 35 against Kansas on their floor last time. So this just feels like a super low tournament potential queue. I don't like to label guys this very often, but if you're in the Mania queue, this just feels like a queue-winning play to me. You know, granted, he's not a senior. He's new and he may even leave for the draft. I don't know how that'll turn out. But I just feel like he's going to have a nice game against Kansas, and he already showed it. And then Kyler Edwards, who I was a pretty big fan of last year, down there at 5-9. He had 20 fantasy points against Kansas last time, which is super great. He does have the upside for more. I don't want to use him, but dang, Eric, at 5-9, he's kind of interesting there. Only 400 more than Taylor, which is kind of wild. What are you doing with the Texas Tech guys?
I don't really know what to do. I'm with you on the Ramsey. Like, I really like that price point. You know, now that we're kind of getting down to the end of the games, like, I'm starting to really like a balanced build just because it looks like there's a lot of guys in the 6K range that I think can be GPP winners on this slate. So I think Ramsey's going to be somebody that I'm going to want to get some shares of. I don't really know what to do with McCullough and Edwards. I think they're both in play here, but I just, you know, I don't really want to use too many pieces against Kansas. And I know Holyfield kind of blew up against Kansas the first time. He went for, 43.5 DK points? 12 of those came with blocks and steals, but still, even if you take those away at 31.5, it's extremely, extremely nice to see, but I don't know, like, if you would have told me that Moretti was down to 5-3 at any point, like, I thought I would be plugging him into play just because he seems like that guy that's always in the mid-20s, but he has really kind of struggled a bit recently, and I'm kind of with you with Clark. I like his all-around game, and as long as he sees some minutes, like, the upside is there. And obviously with the senior day and everything he's kind of gone through in his college career, you know, at Virginia Tech before transferring and everything, I could see this game having some meaning to him personally. So I can get behind your call there. Kansas-wise, Azubuike for GPPs, Dotson for cash, and that's kind of it for me.
Yeah, Garrett's price it's never going to come down again. I mean, it's come down, 700 since in February 24th, but he needs to come down more because he's not been hitting. I have a number. I know he had 27 against TCU. And last time out against Texas Tech, he had 32. So he could still get you that 4.5 at the 7, but it's just not a price that excites me about Garrett when we used to regularly roster him at 5.5 to 5.7. So I agree with you there. I think it would be, a mistake to completely ignore Azubuike just because of his slate-breaking ability. Three of his last four, he's had 40-plus fantasy points. I could see this being one of the frustrating games where he gets lost in the moment a little bit or picks up a stupid foul. So that does concern me, but I certainly want shares. And it's a good call about balance because when you look at the top, Howard, Azubuike, Dotson, Timmy Allen, who we'll get to in a second, Miles Powell, McKinley Wright, there's not a bunch of names there where you're like, I got to have them, or I feel like if I don't have them, I'm going to lose. When, down at 8K, you can go Mays. We just talked about Ramsey. There's a couple other guys on LSU like Watford we like, Quickly, who we both like. So, yeah, the balance look may actually work out just fine. Seton Hall versus Creighton. This is a game that excites me as well. Ken Pom has it 77-74 in favor of Creighton. Seton Hall is 76th in Temple ranking. Creighton 159th. Right away, looking at the senior type stuff, Kelvin Jones would probably get a token start, I would imagine, maybe over Christian Bishop. Big guy there at Seton Hall front court and may get additional minutes anyways just to deal with Lamar O'Gill and Sanjo. See him getting some additional time there. I do have him marked on my CSV list for my MME stuff as a potential to use in a one or two type of situation. Always at home, Tyshawn Alexander and Marcus Nagorowski. Creighton in general is just they're killers at home. So I don't mind using Tyshawn. I don't mind using Dig. I don't like Balik. Those three guys are generally in play anytime they're on the floor at home. Now, Seton Hall's perimeter defense with Quincy McKnight is generally pretty tough, but it's not a situation where they're lockdown defenders that you want to avoid. It's not like, the Virginia team of yesteryear where you just don't take guys against them because they're going to, slow the game down and shut them down. Seton Hall still plays fast, push the pace, and there's still plenty of shots to go around for Zakes and Tyshawn, and they're both in that mid-7 range, which I don't mind at all. Jefferson and Bishop, they're both above 5K. I got aboard the Bishop train last slate, and he did what I thought he would do, and that's let me down. I was really hoping that he wouldn't, but I knew he was going to get into some sort of foul trouble or bone against Yorktown, and he did. I could see him bounce back slightly, but again, I think he's going to lose a little minutes to Kelvin Jones, but at the same time, maybe he doesn't. Maybe it's Jefferson that loses minutes because, as you mentioned on the last show, I forget who Seton Hall was against, but I think it might have – I have to look up here, because of the fact that it might have been Marquette, the fact that Romaro Gill and Sandro, bring so much height and they're on the floor together, that teams, they got to throw bigger bodies at them. So maybe there's potential for Bishop and Jones to see the floor together. But again, they may cannibalize each other. And then Denzel Mahoney, who's usually a guy I like to use on the road a little bit more for Creighton. He's one of the lone Creighton guys that typically does a little better at home. He's there at 4.9. And he's a guy that you could almost be confident in with cash because his floor is pretty close to 20. And they had the two games there in between Butler and St. John's where he was under 10. But generally, if you look at his total games for the year, he's been right around that 20 to 22 fantasy mark. So I don't mind him either. Now for Seton Hall, this should be a smash spot for Sandro and Romaro Gill because of the fact that Creighton, they do have Bishop. It's kind of a smaller center anyways, but they do have Jones, who's just kind of, he's a guy, he's a body, right? But if either of those guys get in foul trouble, there's little Creighton can do to stop Sandro or Gill from getting, pretty easy buckets inside. I think both of those guys have pretty big block potential, too. Creighton takes a ton of threes, but, they do have, like Zags like to penetrate and drive and kick out. So there's going to be some block opportunities for them as well. Projecting blocks is, generally not an easy thing to do, but I do think that
opportunity exists for them. So Sanders up to 7-1 on DraftKings, so it's not an auto lock anymore. Lamar O'Gill is down at 5-5, who I do like a lot for tournaments. Even at 25 minutes, if he doesn't get in foul trouble and plays around 25 to 27 minutes, he'd make value at 5-5 from what I'm seeing here. So I certainly like him. Powell at 8-2 is fine. I don't think I'll be using him because I do – Tyshawn's pretty close to it. If I can figure out who Tyshawn's going to guard generally, it's pretty close to a fade for me because Tyshawn is just – we've seen him lock down other teams' leading scores time and time again. Powell's obviously, you know, on another level, so he's not going to get shut down per se. But last time he faced Creighton, I did look back at some of those highlights earlier, actually, and Tyshawn forced him to 3-for-16, and that was at home. So I have my concerns about Miles Powell here on DraftKings. He's generally been pretty chalky because, again, he's kind of like a Marcus Howard. Everyone knows he's going to chuck and get a lot of fantasy points, but I think this is a fairly decent fade spot. And then with McKnight, Roden, you know, obviously Kale's been dead for a while. I prefer the front court of Seton Hall as I typically do against Creighton. Another good fantasy game, though, Eric, and it's the Hammer. What are you doing with this one?
I mean, Sandro and then either Zagorowski or Alexander, mainly. You know, looking back, like, Jones and Bishop combined to play 22 minutes in the first matchup between these two. Bishop only played 12 and was in foul trouble. So that kind of worries me. So it doesn't really look like they're going to overlap. And Creighton seemed completely fine going small, you know, because they only played 7 guys that game. Kelvin Jones and Mahoney were the only two off the bench. And Mahoney's just 6'5 himself. So, I mean, to me, it would make sense to see them out there, especially because Bishop's only 6'7 himself. It's not like Bishop is a 6'11 guy like Kelvin Jones is. So, like, I want to be on Bishop just because he burned some people, me included, recently. And then knowing that he struggled with fouls in the first matchup. But even in those 12 minutes, he still put up nearly 20 DK points. So the matchup itself is pretty inviting for him as long as he can avoid foul trouble at home. But I just, you know, generally with Creighton, I'm always looking at using Zagorowski or Alexander. Balak generally goes overlooked just because he's kind of behind those two in terms of usage. But he could, you know, he's shown the ability to just suddenly put up a 42 fantasy point game randomly. But I'm probably not going to be on Paul as well. I just don't like the way that he's performed against Alexander's defense, even though Paul has been at his best actually when on the road. I mean, this feels like a game I should want a decent amount of exposure to, but maybe it's just the price points at the top makes it kind of tough to fit in multiple pieces. And I have to kind of look into why Shavar Reynolds played 24 minutes last game against Nova and was in the game down the stretch when Seton Hall was trying to make a comeback before falling out in the last minute. So if he's going to have an increased role, he becomes kind of a GPP dart play for me at 4,100.
Yeah, that's a good call out. All right, last game here, Colorado versus Utah. There's a Pac-10 or Pac-12 game on the slate here, which is unusual for a Saturday early. KenPom has a 70-66 in favor of Colorado. Colorado is 194th in tempo ranking, and keep in mind they're a little worse on the road. And Utah 257. This is the other Hammer game. I don't feel super needy about it. Like Tyler Bates, generally, you know, he's priced down at 7.9 now, which is pretty low for him, honestly, with what we know he can do. But I generally prefer him at home. He has kind of broken that this year and played well on both, but it's still relatively prefer him there. Timmy Allen at 8.3 it seems like a little bit of an overpay. He's generally a pretty bat lock for 30 to 32 fantasy points, though. So, you know, I don't have any really big concerns about him. I just don't think he has the huge upside here. you know, Carlson has, he's 5'7", unfortunately, Brandon Carlson. He's got major upside and a very high fantasy point per minute number. I know he played 32 minutes against Cal and only had 8, but if you look at the rest of it, like Stanford, he had 34, USC 29, UCLA game, he's saddled by fouls. Oregon, he put up 24, he had 48. And he really liked playing Stanford. He had 48 on them the first time. But he's just a guy who you have to worry about fouls with, and I am concerned about him and Beatty maybe, you know, kind of getting physical with each other. So it's not a spot that I'm probably going to use him. There's really no one on either side. There is a guy I want to talk to you about, though, that I've noticed. I'm sure you have, too. Alfonso Plummer for Utah. He's only 4-4 on DraftKings. Against Cal, he played 30 minutes, shot 13 times. He's a marksman. He shoots a ton of threes. He first came onto my radar, I think it was back during the UCLA game, back in February, late February, when he played 17 minutes. But he took 6 threes, hit 3 of them, had 20 fantasy points at 3-8. Then he followed that up by playing 24 minutes against USC, shot 5 of 8 from deep for 25 fantasy points at 3-8. And then, Stanford game, he only played 8 minutes. And then against Cal this last game, he was back and played 30 minutes again for 23-1. Not a peripheral guy. He's not going to give you anything, but he is there to shoot. And when Utah gets stagnant on offense, he's pretty much, from what I can see, the games that I've watched him, like I said, I first saw him against UCLA where I was like, what's this guy about? If he's going to play that 25 to 30-minute mark tomorrow, which maybe he doesn't because, this is a Utah senior night, but he's certainly interesting, especially for tournaments. I don't know that we can use him in cash because of the fact that he may not play that many minutes. You see, even against UCLA in 17 minutes, he's still, obliterated value because he's just chucking. 3 of the last 4 games, he's taken 9 shots. Certified, licensed to shoot. What do you think about Alfonso Plummer? Have you been, kind of seeing what he's been doing lately, and do you think you'd use him?
Yeah,
It looks like Utah doesn't have any seniors anyways, so I guess we don't have to worry about that.
Oh, perfect. So I didn't catch him in the UCLA game, but I was watching that USC game just because I'm pretty sure I had a sweat that night or that day or whatever it was. So I did have that game on TV, and watching him just, come around screens and just fire up shots on the run, he just has a ton of confidence. So it's definitely somebody I'm very interested in. So if Rylan Jones is out again, because he missed the Cal game, and I'm sure that's probably why he got 30 minutes. If Rylan Jones is out with his concussion, I feel like I almost would have to even use him in cash at that point. But we won't know, obviously, ahead of time, so that makes it a pretty risky play. But, watching him just kind of fire away definitely has me intrigued, even at the $600 price increase. And this game isn't on FanDuel, so we can't plug his value in over there because he'd probably be like $3,800 based on their pricing. I'm definitely going to be interested in him.
Yeah, and looking at Utah's rotation, even say Rylan does play, Riley Batten has kind of just fallen. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know if he's in the doghouse or ineffective, but he's kind of fallen out of the rotation to the point where he's only playing 10 to 15 minutes, and they're running Allen, Jantinen, Carlson, Brenchley, and then usually Ryland 30 minutes, and then Gotch is back now, and Plummer were getting the rest. And now you look at it, the game went overtime against Utah or Cal, so they had a lot more minutes, but Gotch played 34 and Plummer played 30. If, like you said, Ryland misses, then both of those guys and Brenchley are going to play, 25 plus. So it does become a situation where, we get an inkling, before that, unfortunately it's the last game, but Plummer would be a guy that I would end up locking, instead of 20 lineups that I've been running, I'd have him at 75%. If I knew Ryland was going to be out, I would just lock him because he's going to take a ton of shots at that, price point. And with that being said, value plays that down there have carry risk, and we've had a lot of guys that we thought would do well or seemed like locks not perform, especially recently. That's been something that people have been kind of, not complaining, but saying, yeah, this is tough because these value guys, everybody said was going to do well, didn't. So I didn't want to say Plummer's far from, the lock of the century or anything like that, but all we can really do, right, is get to the minutes and opportunities, and if a guy's stepping into an injury situation like Aquitas Wayhab, you know, you just got to plug them in and hope that, you know, they're going to produce. The right play on paper is to take the guy that's going to get the minutes, because that's really all you can do. So a lot of this variant stuff that people, because there's been a lot of people lately, and not only my Slack and on Twitter and stuff, when things don't go their way, they're kind of hanging their head. And you, Eric and I do that too sometimes. You just really have to, you know, keep making the right on paper quotations type of play and trust your process. So I didn't ask you about any other guys. I don't know if Colorado or anyone besides Plummer on your radar here kind of seems like a game to fade a little bit.
Yeah, I don't really have a ton of interest in this game overall. You know, McKinley Wright is fine for cash plays. The problem is, like, I'd rather go up and use, like, Dotson or, you know, some of those guys. But he's been real solid and should probably return 4X. But I just don't really love using the Colorado guys on the road. And, you know, I guess Gotch probably has some intrigue for me. He kind of went through a rough spell, and then now the last, what, three games, he's been up over 22 DK points, double-digit shots in each of the last two, and both of those were on the road. So, I don't know, because he's somebody that we had a lot of interest in early in the season, and we thought kind of, you know, he might have a bigger season than he's having. So he's somebody with talent that I'll probably at least consider, especially if I, you know, last man in my GPP builds and I have 5K left over, I'm probably completely fine entering him into my builds. But yeah, this game just doesn't intrigue me, and I'm really shocked that it's actually on the DK slate.
Yeah, I could have definitely done without it too. And actually, I believe, could be wrong about the time frame, but I think Georgia and Missouri it's either at this time or maybe it's an Eastern time thing. Right around that. And I think you and I would both, everybody that plays DFS would much rather have that game than in Utah and Colorado. All right, we reached the point of the show where we're going to talk a little bit about betting. From our betting savior, Johnny's been waiting very patiently to talk to us. I know he's got a lock that he's confident in. How you doing, Johnny?
Oh, I'm doing well, Walter. Well, I was listening to what you guys were talking about. I had to sweat Santa Clara, and I won by a half a point. It was a really good night tonight. I bet like six games today, and I won five bets. So it was a very, very good night for me. But that's besides the point. So we're to the point now where I'm going to have to do it, and it's the way it is. And, Eric, you'll like it. I'm on Florida tomorrow. Yeah, I have no way around the fact that Kentucky is not a good basketball team. You cannot blow a 19-point lead at home against Tennessee. Cannot. I don't know how the hell they did that, then lost by eight, but that team sucks. That's where I'm at with them.
Florida money line?
Well, they're a 3-point favorite.
Okay. All right, bet one. Got it. What else?
But, Walter, we're on Auburn tomorrow.
And, Auburn? I don't know.
Well, I'll explain why. I don't think Tennessee's very good either. And the line's 2.5. I know Auburn sucks on the road, but in theory, this is a letdown for Tennessee. Those are two I've identified, Walter. I like Penn State tomorrow a lot. I like LSU tomorrow a lot. Me and you are going to have something going. And, Walter, you might have to shoot me in the head on this one, but that's okay. I like UCLA outright tomorrow in USC.
I don't mind that. I actually like UCLA. Didn't think I would, but I like UCLA better than USC, definitely. I think USC is kind of fading a little bit.
Well, UCLA is getting 4. What's Ken Pom have that projected score at?
Let's take a look here.
70-64.
All right,
USC.
Yep, 6 points.
and Walter, and I'm, and this is strictly a line read, boys. This isn't something that I generally really follow, but I halfway like Virginia tomorrow against Louisville for the simple fact the line's a pick 'em, and I'm trying to figure out why that is. I know Virginia's been playing decent, but I didn't think Virginia would actually be favored against them. And I'm looking at it, trying to figure this out. And I'm assuming that, like, all the projections have this to being like a one-point game, because there's no way in the world that that line makes any sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, it is one on Ken Pom. They've won, what, 7 in a row, and they're at home. And they lost to Ville, what, by 7 at their place? The Yum Center.
I mean,
so, it makes sense.
I mean, it's a revenge game. I mean, it's a game that if I'm up, I'll bet. And Walter, I'm not going to do it, but because I think the team sucks. And if I bet this shitty fucking team and they beat me, I'm going to be very upset with myself. I do like Texas a little bit against Oklahoma State tomorrow, but I know the minute that I bet Texas, they'll forget how to play and lose to them. So I'm not on it. I know who's
they're waiting.
Win.
They're waiting to suck you in. They're waiting to suck you in.
I mean, I halfway like Oregon State tomorrow to win, but the problem here is that leads to me with Stanford. Look, I'm not expecting them to beat Oregon tomorrow when Oregon hasn't lost at home all year, okay? I mean, it's an 8 or 9 point line, whatever. But here's the deal. Stanford's going to have to get one more win and they're in. Beat Oregon, I don't have to sweat the Pac-12 tournament at all. If they don't, then they better fucking win a game in the Pac-12 tournament. But another game,
you know,
really
you guys are extremely lucky though, because Wichita State loses yesterday, Northern Iowa loses today. Northern Iowa is already listed as the last team in, and they're going to sit and not play. They're definitely not getting in. So all these bubble teams around you keep losing. You guys are actually looking a lot better than I thought last night.
Although, Walter, what kills it though? Utah State's in the final of the conference tournament, but
did they hang on? I know Wyoming was pushing them. Wyoming, man, Wyoming almost got them. That's a bummer.
Indiana-Wisconsin's an ugly basketball game tomorrow. Because Wisconsin, I don't even know what to say about them other than the fact that they've overachieved this year. Because I didn't think they were going to be any good. And on most projections, I'm seeing them as a 5 or a 6 seed. So they're very well coached. I'll give them that.
You need that Indiana loss, though, because that's another bubble team that you need. How about this one, Johnny? Washington, my Huskies are getting 10.5 tomorrow. Arizona can't beat them by 10.5, right?
Arizona can't score. Is Forsey's boy still out?
Who?
Josh Green.
There's no one out now. Josh Green's back.
He's playing? All right. Well, here's the thing. I actually like the Huskies with the points because Arizona, their offense isn't good. And I don't know how I clearly overrated how good I thought they were going to be because our guy Manning hasn't really done what I thought he was going to do. And that's just part of it. I mean, offensively, they suck.
Recently, Mannion, even Eric has been saying that Mannion shouldn't be a lotto pick. But the last three games, he's really quite well. Granted, it's just the last three, but he might be turning it on at the right time.
I mean, Walter, we're going to have fun tomorrow. I mean, Rutgers-Purdue, I mean, here's the thing. Rutgers sucks on the road. The Lions. Purdue's good at home, but Purdue's not good, even though they just beat the shit out of Iowa on the road. That line makes me feel uncomfortable, though, because I know Rutgers is supposedly better, but why the fuck are they getting 6.5, Walter?
Yeah, Purdue's just a different team at home. Okay, I gotta ask you about one more, because I know if you don't talk about Duke, it's not a Johnny segment. Duke is -11 versus North Carolina tomorrow.
It's easy. I like North Carolina with the points.
That does seem easy. I was gonna ask if I was a trap, because that seems pretty easy.
Walter, here's the thing, okay? And Eric can contest to this because he knows his shit just like we do. That is a rivalry basketball game. It doesn't matter who's the better team. That is an overinflated line because, look, Duke is the better team. We all know this. But, Walker, me and you also watched the first game where Duke should have lost, but Carolina is just not good this year, so Duke won. Oh, yeah. I mean, Walter, the total is 153. It's like an NBA total. So for fantasy purposes, it's probably going to be a nice game of plug-in players. Another game I really like, Walter, because this team's right on the fucking bubble. I don't think they're going to get in, but nor here or there. I do think Mississippi State beats Mississippi in the barn tomorrow.
Yeah, they're -6, just money line, right? I was looking at that one, too.
Walter, I'll tell you another game, though, that looks weird, and me and you might be on the home team because this shit just looks weird. I have a question for you. Does SMU just suck ass on the road? Because for some reason, they're playing South Florida in South Florida. The line's a fucking pick'em.
Yeah, DK has it +1 for SMU. I don't know what they're doing, man. They have a nice overall record, but they're falling apart lately. And I don't know why my dude Fahrenheit is just not getting minutes anymore, but it seems like their coach is just playing too many guys. I don't know. They don't seem well coached to me. I've watched more games than them than I probably should.
So we're going to get to Rob's game and your game, because it's a game that I know you want to talk about, because it's actually a pretty big game for all parties involved here. Butler at Xavier. Xavier's a 2.5-point favorite. Where do we go here?
That's a bit of void for me. Butler games have been really quite bad to bet on, and I know that because Rob mutilates our DMs when he bets on them.
By the way, Walter, I think our North Texas boys were hungover off the overtime against fucking Western Kentucky, because they scored 43 points against Charlotte and lost. I was not happy about that, by the way, but I'm not shocked either.
That's all right. They've won us. North Texas has won us a good money, though. They rarely let us down.
And, Walter, I'm going to tell you a game that we're going to be on tomorrow. There's no line yet, but I'm not fucking stupid, and I know how the shit works. We're on Missouri State tomorrow against Valpo. Valpo pulled that out of their ass. They're not a good team at all.
No, that was a surprise. MVC is wilding out. All right, perfect, man. Well, I appreciate that. Before we go, though, I'm going to get Eric's for DFS, like his fade and his lock. And we'll get on out of here.
Oh, geez. My fade probably is going to end up being Miles Powell. My high price lock is, I might as well just stay with it and go with Skylar Mays.
I like
and
it.
I'll give you my GPP dart play. I think I'm going to end up definitely overweight on Nick Rutherford, just for GPP purposes. Like, I just have this sneaky feeling about tomorrow.
That would be sick if he hits. My fade's going to be Timmy Allen. You're taking an easy fade there. Just doesn't seem like a good spot to really be using him. And then lock-wise, a little bit tougher. I'm going to go opposite side in that game with LSU and say and Edwards. I feel like he's going to have an easy time with LSU, even though they're probably going to lose. I just think he's going to have a 40-plus in him.
And then I'll take Plummer as the GPP guy. I think he'll become more popular as the day goes on before lock, but I'll take Plummer. Appreciate it, Eric. Thanks a lot. As always, I know it's late for you, and we'll be talking to you soon. Good luck tomorrow.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good night.
I see you. And Johnny, appreciate all your betting knowledge as always. We'll be talking to you soon, and we're going to start doing shows more often. So we'll start winning money, helping people win money, and get back to it.
Walter, Selection Sunday.
Yes, sir. Oh, yeah, Selection Sunday. We'll talk more about that. All right, see you later, man. We'll appreciate everybody who listened to us live and on demand. Thanks to Eric, as always, and Johnny. Big slate tomorrow, multiple games, lots of betting stuff. Johnny has been talking to me about maybe doing a Selection Sunday show. We'll possibly have something like that, and we'll definitely be doing shows, you know, like I said, more often. So appreciate all the support, as always. Take care and best of luck. We'll see when you guys get your mania feed tomorrow. See you.